We're live.
Super. Happy July, and welcome back to another episode of Dan Has a Plan Beyond the Balance Sheet. I'm Daniel B. Smith, a financial advisor on the Family Wealth Management team at UBS Financial Services. I'm joined by my daughter, Alana J. Smith.
Hi, everyone.
Hello, Alana. We're located in Paramus, New Jersey, and I can be reached at daniel.b.smith@ubs.com. Our guest expert today is Kimmy Johnson, or Miss Johnson, as her students call her. She is an elementary school teacher at the third grade level, specializing in English, language arts, math, social studies, and science. She is not affiliated with UBS Financial Services, and her views are her own.
Okay, so let's talk about third grade.
Wow. When I think of third grade, I feel that was the pivotal moment in my life.
What age is that?
That's age 9.
Sure. Last of the single digits.
Yes. And I love the number 9, as you know.
Yeah, you do.
I do.
Do you want to explain why?
Well, my other daughter is named Janine, J-A-N-I-N-E, Janine.
Janine. Shout out to Janine.
She'll be happy to hear that.
Okay, so age 9. And how did age 9 set you up for financial success?
Well, 3 things happened at age 9 that I specifically remember.
Wow.
1, the Mets, Jets, and Knicks all won world championships.
Whoa. Wait, what year was that?
1969/70.
Another 9.
Thank you.
Magic. Okay.
Secondly, it was the first time I was able to hit a ball over the fence in baseball.
No way.
Yes.
Okay. So that's formative.
It was formative. That was a very cool moment.
Right. All right. What's the third thing?
Mrs. Seifried.
Mrs. Seifried.
She was my third grade teacher.
And?
She was my favorite teacher.
Ever.
Ever. She taught me so much. And the first thing she taught me was accountability.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the first time in my academic career where we were tested and graded and judged.
So you had some responsibility.
Had some major responsibility. I didn't always get 100s and 104s and 108s on my tests.
Right. Yeah. 100 plus.
So when I got my first 50, I go... Whenever she gave a test and it was graded, she would give a stack of them on Friday of all the tests you took during the week, all the quizzes, all the tests, everything. Right? She was a big test giver. I had to bring them home. I had to have one or both my parents sign and affirm that they saw the pile of accountability.
A pile of accountability.
So when that 50 came, ma'am, oh, I was so embarrassed.
Yeah. Were you sweating on the way home?
I was. And we just started learning how to write cursive. So I decided on Sunday night I would write the signature Gene Smith.
Just to start practicing?
I guess so. I guess so.
Talk about accountability.
Exactly. So when I handed the pile of papers back, I made sure that my stack was on the bottom of the pile of all the students.
Sure.
She would go through all the papers during reading time, and she yelled at the top of her lungs, Daniel Smith!
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, boy. Parent-teacher meeting. My father and mother came in. Of course, they went right for the heart. They said, no baseball practice.
Aww.
Oh, boy. First of all, they didn't know that wasn't enforceable. It wasn't happening.
No, it wasn't happening.
Yeah, so I went home that day and baseball practice was at 4:00. They said, okay, up to your room. Yeah, okay. I went up to my room. I crawled out the window onto the porch and I jumped off and I ran to baseball practice.
By any means necessary.
I think if I broke both ankles, you know, whatever. Yeah. It was probably like a 12, 15 feet jump.
Wow.
But anyways, Mrs. Seifried, I remember many things that I was exposed to for the first time. I think the biggest thing was honesty. I learned my lesson very early on that it's better to be honest.
Right. To just lay it out all on the table and say, this is what I got. So when you meet with your clients, do you have to kind of poke them to be honest with you about their finances?
Well, you can always tell when they're upset about something that they share regarding a financial planning feature. I try to spin it as a positive because, you know, everybody thinks that a financial plan is you go from A to B and there's no blips along the way.
Right, just a straight line up.
Yeah, so it's better to just be full disclosure and say, here's where we are and let's plan from there.
Do you find that people are embarrassed to bring you debt, for example?
Yeah, they dance around it a little bit. I just say, hey, raw data, what do we got? School loans, credit cards, 0% interest plans, 84-month plans to buy a refrigerator. You know, what do we got here?
Right. And honestly, I know more people than ever who have to do those kinds of things because the world is just so expensive. It's difficult. It's difficult to face.
It is. It is. And in past episodes, I've brought this up, but it's worth repeating, especially our younger crew. Getting started financially is very difficult, especially on one salary. You know, there's a decision to stay at home and kind of the dynamics of that and the decision to move out and the financial stress of that.
And not everybody has the luxury of going home.
Correct. So digging out of that post-college, you know, very few people come out of college with no debt and 50 grand in the bank. Let's put it that way. It's usually they come out of college with debt, no job, fighting to get a job. Maybe it's not their perfect job.
Need clothes for the job.
Things like that. Yeah. Might be living with three or four roommates. And it's good to have someone to vent to, like a financial planner, about how to overcome some of these things.
Right. It's not just for rich people.
Correct. So I think the last thing I'll say about Mrs. Seifert is this, is that she conveyed to us the importance of reading, which I wasn't a big fan of at that point.
More of a math guy.
Definitely. But she would read for 15 minutes each day to us out loud. And I remember specifically the book called The Boxcar Children.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember the author, but you know, I was captivated because I read so slow at that point. I didn't feel like I was getting to the story. But when she read, she would be emphatic, getting excited about reading a paragraph when there was something exciting happening in the book.
Her tone, her imagination. Yeah.
I remember going to the library and seeing Mrs. Leskovic.
Shout out.
Hello, Mrs. Leskovic. She was great because they lived two doors down from us. So Chris Leskovic was my first person I played with on my block. She was a great long distance runner. Went to, I believe, Oregon.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Chrissy, if you're listening, you were a great athlete.
All right, we'll have to find out.
Yeah, so Mrs. Leskovic would kind of coach me along things I would be interested in.
That's so important because there's a book out there for everybody.
So I remember Mom and I would read books to you guys every day. It's just not the reading. It's recognizing animals and different people of different professions, and you know, and especially with our parents that both are working, and this is just to make the family float financially,
right.
You know, a lot of the kids are dropped off before school.
Mm-hmm.
They go to school, then they have aftercare. I understand the circumstances of that, you know, because it's financial pressure for these parents to live in areas where academics is stressed. Those areas are more expensive to live in. That's a fact. So the teacher is really the centerpiece of that child succeeding for K to 12.
Yeah, they're spending a lot of time with your kid. When you are dealing with a family who's a two-income household because they need to be, are you talking about budgeting for childcare? I mean, some of these public school programs are included, but maybe some are under threat at the moment. And is that part of the financial conversation?
You know, it's costly. I see a lot of parents also supplementing academic, you know, some light tutoring.
Right, okay, that too.
Yeah, if they need help in math or science, there's resources for that. But if I had to give one piece of advice to any parent, it's just to read with your child. That fosters their imagination. They can comprehend what they're reading. And then the last piece is their ability to write. Kimmy will go over that a little bit today, but expressing themselves. Tell me about your family. Tell me about what you did this weekend. Tell me what you did over the summer.
Well, let's ask Kimmy if her students are honest with her, because a 9-year-old has to have an active imagination.
I'm sure there's a little Danny in there somewhere.
Yeah. All right. Without further ado, Kimmy Johnson.
The Kimmy Johnson.
Welcome, Kimmy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Third grade teacher.
Yes.
If you had a choice to pick one grade to teach, would third grade have been it?
Absolutely.
Look at that.
It's funny because I said second or third was really what I wanted, and the position was open for third, and I was just so lucky. It's been the best.
What is it about third grade?
They're on the cusp of understanding and growing, and you're not really a baby anymore. You're still young, but I student taught in fifth grade, so I've been kind of all over. So comparing that too, I'm able to kind of see where I fit best.
I bet you weren't aware. I got my master's in teaching.
Oh, really?
And I did student teaching K through 6, and mm-hmm. I did 7 through 12. I was a phys ed teacher. And you're right, the 9-year-olds mm-hmm. were the best.
Yeah, the sweet spot.
Oh, yeah.
It was a sweet spot.
Yeah.
So tell me, what does it take to become a teacher? What is the academic path that you took?
I went to my undergrad and I had sort of normal general classes. And then towards my junior and senior year, there were specific elementary language arts classes, elementary math classes. But I found that it was in my math master's. My school did a 5-year program. So you stay for one extra year and you get your master's. I found in my master's program that the courses were more rigorous and more oriented towards specifically elementary teaching. So I learned classroom management, curriculum classes. I learned just how to be there for kids. And it was a lot more specific to what you were going to do, where I found that my undergrad was more general, which was still helpful. But if I didn't do my master's, I would be a little bit more lost because the classes were much more designed to get you right into the workforce. So it was a lot of work. Then I had to stay at the school I was student teaching at till their school year was over. And the way student teaching worked was I took over the classroom in October. So I was basically their teacher. My mentor teacher stepped aside for the whole rest of that program. Wow. And it was me.
Pressure's on.
Yes.
So not to date myself, but I got my master's in 1983. But the job market was, there were no jobs for teachers.
Right.
Really?
So, yeah, I was in upstate New York and they were directing me to Texas, New Mexico, Arizona. You know, I hadn't been out of New York State really. So how did you find the need for teachers, the job market?
Yeah, you know, there was a lot of talk about there's a teacher shortage, we need teachers. I believe there may be a teacher shortage, but I think that they would prefer to hire within district or they move people around more.
There you go.
Just because of funding. I know a lot of people that are struggling to find jobs and they're more than qualified, but it's just that people aren't hiring or they're posting and they're not bringing people in. I actually applied to over 20 schools. I got so lucky, obviously, but I just remember sitting down and applying and applying and applying, and it was very minimal, the responses.
Wow.
So it's tricky.
So clue me in here a little bit because it's been a while. But obviously, I went to third grade. I went to college. I had three kids take third grade.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it was always pencil and notebook. But is it just the iPad now? Where are we in the whole technology thing?
Yeah, good question. So we do have Chromebooks. Chromebooks is the big thing.
Okay.
Just back up a sec. What's a Chromebook?
Chromebook, it's a computer. Like, we didn't have computers in the classroom. We would go to technology when I was young.
Right.
This Chromebook is the new thing. Even student teaching, they were using Chromebooks. So it's just a type of laptop, basically. There's some schools where they actually take them home with them and do work on it. We don't do that. There's a Chromebook cart in the classroom, and I assigned some work on there. I try not to do it too much, though, because I just prefer them writing pencil to paper. And I understand getting them ready for typing. We'll do typing games sometimes, but I really try to avoid it, especially because then it gives them more opportunity to want to like play games on the computer and things like
right.
that. Mm. So, yeah, I found myself not using it often, but it is the new thing, branching them out to technology.
Is there still a chalkboard or no?
There's a whiteboard.
A whiteboard?
Yeah, and then there's a smart board as well. I do a lot on the smart board.
What's the difference between a whiteboard and a smart board?
Whiteboard is just you draw on it with the Expo marker. Mm-hmm. Smart board is it's connected to your computer and you basically display on the board. There's like a digital pen, you write on it. It's connected to my computer. So I could pull up a digital textbook or I could put a video on the board or something. This way they can see it. Also, if we do some math problems on the digital textbook, I'll have them come up and they can write on the smart board. So it's interactive.
Yeah. The smart board was just coming into play when I was leaving high school to date myself.
And what year did you graduate there, Alana J?
That's not a fair question. We don't talk about that. But yes, they were just coming into play. So I imagine they're in every classroom.
Yeah,
now.
They are.
So the first day of class, how many are coming into your environment?
So this year I had 19.
Is it just you?
It is just me. Sometimes, depending on IEPs or any needs that students have, you may have an aide in the classroom.
Okay.
I didn't have one this year. I didn't have any IEPs or anything like that. I had 23 in student teaching, and I just remember it was a lot. There's a difference between having 19 kids and having like 23, 24 kids. And it's helpful to just have another voice.
Did you go through memorizing their names?
Learned the first day. I mean, I obviously had the list and I looked at it and I made them like little gifts and things for the first day.
All right. Give me an example of a gift. Come on.
Well, we made seashells. I had my mom help me because she's the artist of the family. We made them seashells with their names on it. So we put that on their desks. And then I did gifts like throughout the year. The end of the year gift, I gave them little buckets with shovels and bubbles and cute stuff in there. Yeah, they love the seashells. They still talk about it. So now I guess I have to do it every year because
it's your
everyone's
thing.
Talking about it.
We got marbles, by the way.
With your name on it?
No, but you know, we played marbles in the schoolyard.
That's sweet.
That's so cute.
Yeah. Are you
ticks and rebounds count, by the way? Ticks and rebounds. Anyways, sorry to digress.
Is that a marble thing?
It is. People in my age bracket are going to identify with that.
You can't play marbles on Chromebooks. I bet you can, true. Actually.
I'm sure there's a way.
Are you paying out of pocket for supplies like that?
I do. So for anything that's benefiting the class, in my opinion, decorations that are nice or gifts for them, that does come out of my pocket. Regular school supplies, we do a list before the start of the school year, and they'll cover that. But anything outside of that, which in my opinion is a necessity because it just sets the tone for the year.
Right.
So teachers do have to, unfortunately, pay out of their pocket and work hard to make it look the way it is and feel like a place you want to spend 10 months, however long it is, with them.
So how involved was Mrs. Johnson, your mom, with Miss Johnson in getting your schoolroom ready?
Probably more involved than she wanted.
I heard there might have been a sister cameo.
Oh, my sister came one day and then she never came back because it was a little too much. I feel like I started the first week of August. Like, I really was there pretty early, and we'd spend hours setting things up and taping things and moving things around. We were sweating by the end of the day, and I'm on the second floor, so that was fun, all up those steps with the boxes and everything.
What are some of the things you would recommend that have been so instrumental?
My favorite thing from my wish list was my classroom doorbell. It's an attention grabber. I ring it and they're silent. It's crazy. It is very crazy. And I saw it actually from one teacher in Connecticut when I was student teaching that had it. I was like, I got to get one of these. And it was
life changing. Wow.
So that's my number one you need to get. Right. You teach it on the first day so they know when they hear it. Voices are off. Yeah.
That's a pro tip right there.
That's a major pro tip. You know, I'm focused on the organization here. Was it like A to Z, how they sat, or how did you do that?
For their tables?
Yeah.
So I honestly did it randomly, and where I put them the first day by week two was not where they sat, because then I started to learn who they could be around and what would benefit them best. Even just looking at their learning style, if there was a kid who I was like, I want he or she by the board.
So school supplies, what would be the Miss Johnson school supply list for your classroom?
Tons of pencils, because they constantly lose them. I don't know where they go, but I had a pencil bin. I just got them extra pencils in case they needed them. It was empty by like the third week, and they brought their own pencils in. So that's definitely pencils, like as much as you can possibly get.
Buy in bulk.
Yes. Glue sticks too. They lose them all the time. There's a lot of things lost.
So as far as class decorum, do we have some Miss Johnson rules of the road?
The first day of school, I always read this book called Our Class is a Family. And we do an activity with it where on a little post-it note, they come up and they write what they think a family is. And I don't have them do it based on a family is mom or dad. It's more of what defines a family. And then the biggest thing I established day one is that we're going to be together for so long, 7 hours a day for however many months. This is a family. We treat each other with respect, kindness. And I would do brush-ups on that every week. I would remind them that, especially in third grade, I always said that they're role models. And they love to hear that because it gives them a sense of power. So I say, when you're in the hallway, when you're at recess, you're a role model to not only other grades, but to your grade itself. Our class is a role model. So you always want to be on your best behavior. You want to be treating people kindly. On top of that, I do reward systems too, based on just behavior and kindness. So if I notice them doing really hard work during the day, I come around with raffle tickets. They have a little bucket, and if they fill it up, they'll get a prize. I do something called mystery person. So I'll pick a stick at the start of the week and I'll keep it a secret. And then if their behavior is good by the end of the week, I'll announce who it is. If their behavior was not so good, I'll just say, oh, I can't announce my mystery person this week. And it just makes them kind of sit up and be like, oh, what did I do? Was it me? So all those rules you have to establish the first week, because it sets the tone for the rest of the year. And the biggest thing I say is you have to stick with it. If you just say something and then change your mind throughout the year, they're not going to believe you with anything else you say.
Accountability.
Mm-hmm.
You should start doing that in the office, mystery person.
Yeah. It works.
I'm sure it does. So if someone is, let's just say they're crying about something. Mm-hmm. I'm sure someone had to cry this year.
Oh, so many.
Okay. What is the basic protocol that you use to diffuse that?
So I'll normally pull them aside or in the hallway just to give them privacy. You don't want to do it in front of everybody. And I try to just unlock the root of the problem, because there's clearly a reason they're upset. And it's normally a little bit deeper than whatever they say, like, oh, a kid looked at me funny and I'm upset. It's probably deeper than that. So I try to unlock it. I talk it out with them. I normally crack a joke somehow and make them smile a little bit. And the situation normally diffuses pretty quickly. But if it went further and they weren't okay, we have a guidance counselor in the school that always will pull kids and talk to them. So if I feel that it's necessary to go further with that, I'll obviously call them. But normally the situation diffuses itself just by having a conversation and being lighthearted and understanding. The key is being understanding. They want to feel seen and feel heard. They don't want you to just brush it off. So you have to establish that conversation with them and just say, I'm here for you. I understand you're upset. You know, we're here to have fun and learn. Let's just take a deep breath and go on with our day.
It's wonderful.
So obviously I got to get a pet peeve in here, right? So one of my pet peeves is why they have back to school night 2 days into the school year. I think there should be a 1 month moratorium so you get to know your kids. And then I think there should be a second back to school night after the new year.
Yeah.
Any groundswell to that thought?
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, back to school night was, like you said, I think it was 5 days after the first day of school, maybe. And I was terrified. I was very scared.
Yeah.
I mean, I handle myself and hold myself well, but I really do remember being very scared because number one, I'm a young teacher and sometimes parents aren't all that thrilled with that just because, you know, they care about their child. They want the best for them. And so I was just nervous on what the reaction would be, especially because I hadn't had that time to really establish a relationship with their kid yet. But I will say once they came in and I did my thing, it went well and it was fine and they were very nice. But I agree. I think that we jump into things so quickly.
Okay, so what happened with the class parties? All the nut allergies, too much sugar.
This is such a boomer question.
So what are the confines of a class mom or dad?
Yeah, so I had three class parents this year who were great. They get sent the allergy list. I obviously have it as well, but they really handle everything, which is so nice. Sometimes they'll ask if any new allergies arose or confirm something with me, and then I'll go straight to the nurse because sometimes I don't even know.
Right.
Even though I know their allergies, I'm like, but can they have this? So they really did handle everything. We had a Christmas party or a winter party. We had Valentine's Day. We had, Halloween. And then the end of the year party. And they were great. They had fun activities for them. We didn't do any crazy food or anything. I think we did pizza one time and then we did chips or popcorn. So things that were simple. But that was always fun to have them come in. They worked so hard and they were so kind. Yeah, I got lucky.
You ever a class dad?
I would just help out on field day or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Right. Mom was a class mom.
Yeah.
She was a high class class
mom.
Yeah. So one of the topics I spoke about with Alana prior to you coming on was I felt in third grade, honesty came into play, okay, where I really understood what honesty was.
Yeah.
Is honesty actually a topic that you talk about?
All the time. That's the biggest thing.
Wow.
I say, if you do something wrong, you might as well tell me because it'll be worse for you if you're not telling the truth about it. So that's something I also do on day one is talk about being honest because honesty comes with everything, with doing your homework by yourself. That's a big thing because I say to them, you know, homework is not for me to sit down and say you're doing everything wrong. It's for me to understand if you understand what we learned this week. So that's a big thing, obviously taking tests, doing your own work, and then just whatever goes on outside the classroom at recess. If there was an incident, you have to tell me exactly what happened and who was involved. You can't sugarcoat it because it all comes back in the end.
So what about work ethic? Do you speak about that?
Yeah, I just always want them to be doing their homework specifically. That was a big thing this year. They do a lot of extracurricular activities. So lots of sports. And a big thing I was hearing from them was I didn't have time to do my homework because I had sports. And I just said to them, well, you know, school does come first. And I'm not giving crazy homework where you're sitting down for like an hour. It's like a worksheet. So that was an excuse I heard a lot. And I just reminded them that their work ethic is so important because it's going to help them in the future. Sports will always be there. And of course, go and do your fun things. I know you sit in school for 7 hours. Who wouldn't want to go play? But it's not beneficial to them if they're not on top of themselves and taking responsibility. That's another big thing. They like to say, well, my mom didn't remind me. And I said, well, it's not mom's homework. It's your homework. So we have to be on top of that now. We're 8 and 9 years old.
I remember in third grade that I finally got with reading. I thought reading was just more functional, but our teacher read to us every day. Is that still a practice?
Yeah, I do read to them often. We do curriculum reading, which is little tiny stories to help them with comprehension. But then we also read novels as a class as well. Aside from that, I try to read them a story every day, either me reading them a story or there's a cute little website they like called Storyline Online where it's celebrities read them stories.
Oh,
so it'll
cool.
either be me or if they want a famous person for the day, we'll watch a video of it. But yeah, I try to keep it as often in the class as I can. That's my favorite subject, and I know that's a lot of their favorite subjects. And then it always ties into writing as well, which is awesome. If we read something, I'll say, okay, now I want you to write about what you read.
Is there still a thing called standardized testing?
Yes.
Okay.
It starts in third grade.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And it's a lot of prep for it. We dedicated really the second half of the year to incorporating ELA test prep, math test prep. It's also on the Chromebook. So the whole test is online, which was new to me. I remember I took it in a book.
Right.
So they had to learn how to drag things in the box and
that's
sort
a whole
things.
New thing.
Whole new thing. So that was a good chunk of the second half of the year.
I always ask this, but was there an aha moment for you that you just went home that day and you're on cloud nine?
Yes. There was a test they took. So it wasn't their standardized test, but they do have little tests here and there to just see their growth throughout the year. And there was a test they took at the beginning of the year, then the middle, and then the end, or closer to the end, I should say. It was March. And I looked at their scores, and I had some kids who went to pullout support that their score grew tremendously high that it pulled them out of the pullout support class.
Wow.
And that was just my aha moment. I was like, this is the impact you have is so special, and it just makes everything worth it to see their growth, not even just academically, but just as people too. I will say, in student teaching, my cooperating teacher, who was my mentor, was the best person ever, the most helpful. Aww. And there's been some times where my friends didn't have a great mentor teacher. They didn't allow them to do certain things, or they weren't as communicative with them. But mine was just so willing to help, and also so willing to just let me do it. She That's let huge. Me take charge, and she sat there. And then afterwards, she'd give me advice about it. But she was so great.
The last question I'll ask is this. What was your favorite class trip this year? Or did you have one?
We did have a trip. I will say I was so tired after, but we went to the Bronx Zoo.
Oh, my God.
And I did complain afterwards, but I loved it. They were so cute and they were so excited. And it's a big zoo.
Huge.
And that was 80 third graders. And it was crazy, but it was very fun. And I could tell they enjoyed it.
Is that the same trip you're going to take next year?
Oh,
next
yeah.
Year? Oh, okay.
Round two.
All right. At least you know what to expect
yep.
now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's good. So this is the Kimmy Johnson.
Yeah. Thank you, Kimmy. This was so fun.
Thank you for having me.
Good luck next year.
Thank you so
much. Yeah. Enjoy the summer break.
Thank you.
That was Kimmy Johnson, Miss Johnson.
Yeah, she's a dynamo.
I want to go back to third grade and be in her class. Although my third grade teacher was amazing, and she's no longer with us. Ms. Ravenio was her name. And she was, I mean, talk about a dynamo. The workload went way up that year.
Yes.
Which was good for me. I liked it.
Ms. Ravenio was so honest.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Talk about honesty.
Yeah, she told it like it was.
Yeah, she...
And... There was no sugarcoating, yeah. Which I loved.
Yeah. I remember having my first, or at least my first formative in-school crying moment in third grade. I remember I forgot my homework, which is not like me.
Alana.
That is really not like me.
I'm sensing someone got a call.
Yeah, probably. But I was devastated because I had made this mistake. And I remember she took me aside, just like Kimmy said, to do it in private. She took me aside and I was like crying. I was like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Because I think I probably thought she was really disappointed in me. And she told me, save your sorries for something that matters. Save your tears for something that matters. This doesn't matter. And it was so special to me. Yeah.
That's amazing. A third grade teacher would say that to you. That's
right.
Awesome. I just love that she was nearing the end of her career when you had her.
Right.
And she was as vibrant as Kimmy Johnson. She gave 110% every day.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And she just did so, so, so much for the student academic year. I just remember looking back on that, and you were high energy, and it was so formative.
Yes.
Really. She accentuated everything that mom and I would want a teacher to accentuate.
Yeah,
in the classroom.
Huge.
And I could tell with Kimmy too, she literally loves and cares.
Right.
And that, if you have those two things, you're going to be a good teacher.
I don't think I could do what Kimmy does. I mean, the energy alone, it's wild.
No, it's a huge effort physically.
Yes.
Emotionally, mentally. It's draining.
Yeah, it really is a noble profession. I mean, you can see it just in Kimmy's passion, and all the great teachers we've known along the way really do have a calling.
And I admire, you know, a lot of the teachers have their own families, so they're going home to their own families.
Right.
They have two or three kids. So it's an amazing, amazing accomplishment. You know, she mentioned the word family in the episode, and, you know, we're Family Wealth Management, and we try to bring that same doctrine to our client base, okay? Because their families are their most important thing, and we try to be a part of that.
Right, because you are, because finances are.
And I think from an academic pursuit, even if you're pursuing, like she talked about the prerequisites and her Bachelor's of Science degree, even if you don't go into teaching, it does have some major applicability to working in team environments, being collaborative. So it's just not solely for teaching. You could work for the rec department, you could work for a major Fortune 500 company. It has applicability.
Yeah, I mean, you're Exhibit A.
Well, one of them, yes.
Exhibit Dan. All right, Dad, till next time.
All right. Love you.
Love you.
Bye-bye.
Presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services Incorporated offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services Incorporated is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.